Welcome to Under the Ring Pro Wrestling Conversations. My name is Phil Strum. So happy you've joined me today. Really happy to have with me today one of the most influential figures in wrestling in the last 50 years, Jeff Jarrett. He's now in a role with All Elite Wrestling, where he's leading business development and running the strategy side of AEW's live events, their first house shows, which are beginning in March in Troy, Ohio. Of course, Jeff is not only a Hall of Fame wrestler in both WWE and Impact, but he's also the founder of TNA and Impact Wrestling. And so much of what you see around pro wrestling has Jeff Jarrett's influence on it. Very excited for you to listen to my chat with the King of the Mountain. So here we go. So happy to have with me today one of the most influential people in pro wrestling in the last 50 years. Currently, he's director of business development for All Elite Wrestling. He's also the founder of Impact Wrestling and Impact and WWE Hall of Famer. It's the King of the Mountain, Double J, Jeff Jarrett. Jeff, so happy you're with me today on Under the Ring Pro Wrestling Conversations.
My man, Phil Strum from Poughkeepsie, Mid-Hudson Civic Center. Were you there the night Double J debuted? We're really going to go back mantles, but no, I digress. I won't start an interview by asking you questions, but Bill, how are you doing, my man? Good to see you.
I'm doing great. So happy you're with me today. And I was not in the building that night. I actually didn't live up there yet. So Yeah, I was still on Long Island when that happened. I remember watching it, but
well, you're on Long Island. My condolences, my most sincere condolences. I'm kidding. Oh, good.
So you've been in the wrestling business your whole life and your family's been in it even longer. What are your thoughts on the importance of AEW and its existence and its health and kind of the broader view of pro wrestling and kind of like you've got to see them from the outside in and now you're getting to see it a little bit from the inside out. So what, how do you kind of assess what they're doing and how important it is?
It is, Phil, you know, I think the best way to frame it is I don't think its importance can be overstated. That's how important I believe it is in that I think, obviously, you know, you can hear 1,000 cliches, competition is good, and it is, and everything that goes with it. But when you kind of take a step back and look at the evolution of the industry, and I'm going before cable television and the territories, and look, there were territories, and back even back in those days, they used to call it outlaw wrestling, but that was the competition, but they didn't have TV. And so, you know, and my father obviously was one of the 22 promoters as the years rolled along. But when things went national, it goes without saying, the Attitude Era was the really the first time that there was a truly competitive environment. And, you know, you do, there's research and surveys and all over the globe. And that era of wrestling, you know, is very, very memorable. And I think at the very, very top of the reason is competition. It brings the best out, not just in talent, but in every person that earns a check from promotions, as well as I believe the fans have just an extra layer of, you know, again, Yankees, Red Sox, Lakers, Celtics, any kind of rivalry, they want to kind of root for their home team or their home promotion. So, you know, I think it's super important. In 2002, that was a part of a huge part of my business strategy that I understood from a very, very simplistic kind of terms is that, you know, you can say there's a number one and number two, but AEW, what an incredible alternative it is, and not just domestically, but internationally. So I think it's, I'll circle back to what I said. I don't think its importance can be overstated. I truly don't.
Yeah. And I really just think it's impact. Its existence is so important
without question for
anything, competition within wrestling, for the wrestlers themselves, you know, just being able to, you know, have salaries that are competitive and that kind of stuff too. I mentioned, you know, kind of your influence on the business. If you look around pretty much any company in wrestling these days, I think you can identify some Jarrett fingerprints, even people.
That's longevity, Phil, I guess.
But even, you know, people you work closely with in your past stops, especially in Impact, TNA, and other places, I just appreciate the hell out of what you and your father accomplished for, you know, getting TNA off the ground as a viable place to work for people. I was a weekly Asylum pay-per-view buyer back, you know, 20 plus years ago. What's it mean for you to have that legacy, not only in the ring, but a complete track record behind the scenes that people can study and learn from?
Oh boy, Phil, you just gave me a layup for me to dive into my podcast, My World. You know, in a lot of ways, founded in 2002 and resigned there from 2013 and moved on. And a lot of times that was just kind of in my rearview mirror. But doing the weekly podcast with my partner, Conrad Thompson, and diving into a lot of that, it's I guess in a lot of ways, it's I have a unique perspective that I get to look back on it. But Conrad constantly tells me, hey, Jeff, your story's like none other. You're third generation promoter, you're second generation talent. You've worked for all these different promotions and the Hall of Fame stuff and all that. And it's just kind of been my life. But when I look back and look at where the industry was, we'll say when Vince acquired his competition, that in so many ways was received with so many mixed emotions. Of course, WWE, everybody, folks, and they're internally, and you hear legitimately the stories of the champagne poppet, that they destroyed their competition. They bought them, you know, pennies on the dollar and everything that went with it. And I was there, but I also knew that there's a void in the marketplace because I just think coming off the, like I previously said, coming off the Attitude Era, what made that, and there's a lot, there was fantastic talent. The distribution points were huge. I could go on and on and on, creative and storylines. But at the very top of it, the competition that was truly there. And when you get to the top of the mountain, as WWE did, you naturally take a deep breath, you exhale, and so your product's not as good. And we I think everybody immediately saw that. And as through the years went on, it just happens. So to have my fingerprints on, you know, we went from, like you said, that weekly Wednesday night pay-per-view and built it up and had a 2-hour show, and the organization was generating $50 million a year and developing talent. That's one of the things that it's easy for me to look back and reflect on. And, you know, the ups and downs, was it easy? No, but man, how rewarding. And I feel in so many ways, I got lucky because I kind of look at the roster that we had, you know, from 02 to about 09, 010, and kind of where those guys have been, where they're at now and where they're going. It's very, very rewarding in so many ways.
And it's interesting for me, looking at your time outside of WWE and AEW, you've worked cards for places like GCW and AAA in Mexico. And I think that would give you kind of a leg up in terms of being ahead of trends and seeing where things are going, which is probably the most important thing that anybody in the business can do in terms of understanding their audience. What kind of things can a guy like you learn while you're going to places like GCW and AAA?
Oh, Phil, I don't think we have literally, and I'm saying this kind of tongue in cheek, but I don't know that I'll do a good enough explaining, but B, if we have enough time. But the one thing, and I was taught this as literally as a kid, from my father, from Jerry Lawler, from just whatever we call them, vets, old timers, even my grandmother. You know, my grandmother never stepped foot in the ring, but she also kind of nurtured this along, is that you got to have an ear. I think that a lot of times, and I still do this to this day, I go out and listen to a show and listen to the crowd, and you can, if you really dial in to hearing things out there and obviously observing things. And so, you know, years ago, I would go to Japan or Puerto Rico, and we went out to Texas and, you know, the Von Erich and WCCW, and you just kind of hear different crowds. My home territory, the Memphis crowd was different than a Louisville crowd. But if you just kind of think that you, and go through the motions and go out every night and say, oh, that's the fans out there, that's what we do and that's what they do, that's you're missing so much of this business. And I try to let guys know a little bit of that. Sometimes they look like I'm a little crazy, but tuning your ear up and really listening to the people is something that I've learned. You know, last year when I did the GCW stuff at Hammerstein, you know, going out and listening to the first couple of matches, it helped me later when I went out and wrestled. Same with NWA, same with every show I'm on. I just think there's something to really listening to things which will open your eyes to, like you said, trends and characters that work, and more importantly, sometimes characters that don't work and don't resonate. So you kind of know, okay. And sometimes that's the most important things not to do. And if guys would kind of invest in that in this day and age, I think it would help them out a lot, because that is, at the end of the day, what it's all about. Whether you're a producer, whether you're a cameraman, whether you're mixing the music, producing the music, whatever role you're selling merch, you got to understand your audience and understand what resonates with them. And I think that is something that I, thank God I was sort of born and raised and reared that kind of way, is really understanding the emotional connection and find out what resonates, because that kind of keeps things ticking and progressing.
Great answer. I mean, I know you said you couldn't sum it up totally, but I think you just did anyway. So
okay, that's right.
You and Raphael Morphy are probably the best people I can think of to get AEW house shows off the ground. You got Troy, Ohio coming up. How are you guys kind of viewing that project, and what can the fans expect from that?
Buddy, Phil, I've been asked once. I've been asked. It's getting way up there over the last, 30 days, or, you know, we really just announced it, I don't know, 10 days ago, the first event. But it's going to be a crawl, walk, run process. And I believe the strategic mindset is absorb as much information as we can, as quick as we can, to truly make – look, there's no plan perfect. We're going to have our ups and downs. We're going to have our hit and our misses. But, you know, coming out of the gate, there was a report online about how many shows WWE has reduced their non-televised live events, and we haven't been in the market since the launch of AEW. So I think the timing's real good. I think the day that our television show airs live on Wednesday and kind of dovetails into Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But, you know, I think we're going to start slow and start picking up the pace and kind of figure out eliminate the negative and accentuate the positive and keep progressing. But I could not be more excited, because it is a real growth opportunity, I think, for so many. I mean, that's what the business, the real essence of it is. I'm born and raised here in Nashville, and, you know, there's artists that come to town, that move to town and, you know, literally spend their life savings, move here, write songs, try to be an artist, but their goal is to get out on that road and play their music. Well, in the wrestling industry, it's you know, obviously the TV is the utmost importance, and you know, our pay-per-view weekends. But at the end of the day, getting out, and it's a profit center. It's also a marketing initiative. Also, it is how you really own your craft, like going back to my listening comment. But there's so much upside to it, and for me to be blessed to have a part of it, I'm pumped, Phil, in so many ways. Because at this stage of my career, you know, when I look back on it, what an opportunity that's in front of all of us to, you know, the Khan family launched AEW and up and running and wildly successful, and now here come the live events right up my alley.
And going back a little bit, so two people you're working with closely now, or two people you did before too, how much fun are you having working with Jay Lethal and Sanjay Dutt again, along obviously with the big giant Satin of Singh? You and Lethal, I think, starting with that Flair Andrade match, and now with the different rivalries you've had at AEW, it's just so much, it's such a good natural chemistry there. I guess, what are your thoughts on that, and did you expect to be in the ring as often as you are?
No. That's the short answer of that. But to go back on, and I'm going to steal your exact words, because authentic, natural chemistry cannot be manufactured. It just can't. Now, through the annals, and there's been lots of tag teams that hadn't quite got together off camera, but when they're put on camera, they go to another level. Just when I look back at Jay Lethal, and he was a kid when I first saw him in Wayne, New Jersey, working independence, and then for him to come on board at TNA and our relationship, and I just have always thought the world of his talents. He makes it look too easy. I've often joked with him about it, but he is really, really, really good in ring, and his charisma. He oozes it. I mean, it goes without saying. He's got a boatload of charisma. And the opportunity that came up, gosh, now it seems like it was yesterday, but last summer, when, again, I'm going to go back to that authentic situation that just kind of blossomed. That wasn't the original plan for me and Jay Lethal to take on Ric Flair and Andrade, his son-in-law. But as that progressed, and the real-life relationship that Jay has with Rick, and my real life, 25, and my family, 35, 40-year relationship with Rick and Conrad, and how, although it kind of went together, it goes without saying how successful that weekend was. But, you know, maybe a little known fact is that Sanjay and Jay have been best friends for years. So, you know, I've had a relationship with Jay, but I've also had a tight relationship with Sanjay. We worked together, obviously, at TNA. We worked together at Global Force. We worked together on Ring of King, and we've always stayed in contact. I think the world of Sanjay and his family, but his brain as it goes into this business. But Sanjay flew down because him and Jay are so tight. So he was actually backstage at the Ric Flair last match. And so you kind of put those elements together and to see where things are at right now with AEW and just how it's all kind of gelled together. And, you know, me and Sanjay, it goes without saying, we may be 1-2, and I'm going to claim 1 on what we truly believe is really the next frontier of professional wrestling, the opportunity. It's, you know, in the financial worlds, they call India an emerging market. Well, it's emerged. It has grown unbelievable in the last 10 years since we did Ring of Kings, so the upside. So for us to have the opportunity and literally Sotnam's, you just can't write this. Sotnam's documentary on Netflix is called One in a Billion. I just think the chances of us all coming together at this time in a lot of ways are one in a billion. But his athletic ability, his upside, if you will, his general personality and how the four of us fit together, I just think it's something that you just can't really put a finger on. But I just think, going back to your term, Phil, natural chemistry is a perfect analogy, a perfect descriptor of who we are.
Awesome. And I think Jay Lethal is doing some of his best work I've ever seen right sure. now. I don't know if anybody is, you know, everybody picks up on that, but I've never been more entertained by the guy.
Well, it's, you know, I often have thought, even not just recently, through the years, is that, you know, you, to give a basketball analogy, Jay's the guy that has always kind of been in the starting five, picks up his 25 points a game quietly, helps everybody else around, makes everybody on the court better. That's what Jay does. And he's got to a level where there is an expectation. Oh, Lethal's great. And it's one of those guys like, no, wait a minute. You expect him to be great. Let's kind of give him his flowers. Jay naturally has kind of a, I don't say passive relationship, but a lot of times it's a quiet demeanor. But man, when he cranks it up, and that's, you know, he, as far as my in-ring work, he definitely incentivizes me. I got to keep up with Jay. Not easy. My mouth can keep up with Jay. I don't know about my physical skills, but I'm doing my best.
That's great. So you've seen him probably more than anyone, but what can a young wrestler learn from watching Jerry the King Lawler matches? Is there anything you've learned from watching him, working with him, or even talking with him over the years?
I think I just saw that this recently with his health scare. And again, the King is going to pull down that strap again. I'm not going to say for the last time, because it'll happen over and over and over. And it's going to make his big comeback. But yes, positive, great news coming out of his health situation. But, you know, so many people know Jerry from the Attitude Era on, and he's the King with one-liners and a great color commentator. And some people don't even realize how good he was at that with I know JR, but Lawler and McMahon were very good as well, just Jerry's skill set with his mouth. But you go back into the King of the Memphis when he was a big babyface, which was phenomenal. But what got him to that mountaintop is something that I don't think people really understand. And he was the heel that the entire territory was built around. It was Jerry the King Lawler, and he could, you know, incredible talker, great bump taker. His timing was unbelievable. Yes, his punches are unbelievable. But at the end of the day, there's nothing Jerry really can't do in this business as far as being a performer. But I think it would do a lot of good for young performers to go back and just kind of watch his catalog, watch as much as you can. You know, you have to apply it to today's standards and move through it. But his pacing and timing, I learned Bill, I can't tell you how much I learned from him through the years. And I got lucky, you know, to go on before him for years and years and years. And he'd do the main event and I'd watch it, but I'd be in a lot of them with him. And so there's nothing like that education of absorbing a great, and he is an all-time great.
Yeah, and even watching him, you know, obviously in the last few years, just live and stuff like that. One of my favorite interview assignments I had was when I got to talk to David Arquette when he was about to work with Jerry Lawler, because he's so into all the Andy Kaufman stuff that he was just so excited to be able to work with the guy that Andy actually worked with, you know, in some way. So that was always cool to kind of see, you know, sort of the reverence he held Jerry and going into that stuff.
And, you know, Phil, that we did that show Tales for the Territory, and we kind of talked about the Kaufman episode. When you really dive into it, Dutch Mantel was on there and my father was on there. People don't really understand, for lack of a better word, how groundbreaking that really was. When you have other promoters calling my father saying, I'm glad Lawler kicked his ass. They bought it hook, line, and sinker. That's like, okay, guys, job well done. The essence of our industry.
I enjoyed that people weren't still kind of even really sure until like Lawler's biography came out and like Man of the Moon came out. You had the one little scene with the nod in it to just be like, oh, they did know, you know, that kind of stuff. Yeah. I love that Andy Kaufman episode. I love going back and watching that stuff because it's before I was a fan.
Right.
You were probably there.
I watched it on the couch. Look, I was young. I wasn't in the business yet. I was a young, I watched Letterman on my couch. And my jaw dropped. I just could not believe. I believed 100%. Hell, I'll believe a lot of stuff nowadays. But no, I was a kid. I bought it hook, line, and sinker. I mean, a lot of people do. Dutch Mantel was smart to the business there, and he kept telling, you know, he documented it. He would tell my father and others, I don't want to know. I'm watching this as a fan. That's another thing that's kind of missed to go back is that if guys will try to go out and look, put themselves in the position of a paying customer and try to understand, all right, they just work 6, 8, 10, 12 hours and they got their kids or maybe kids or it's a date night or whatever, and they're going to come watch this, kind of have it. If you look through those lens, it kind of gives you a whole perspective. A, how lucky we are, and B, what an opportunity it really is.
I bet you there's a lot of stuff that people can learn from watching Jimmy Hart's contributions, both back then and even this, the stuff that basically got him hired into WWF with, you know, what he was doing in the Memphis run too. I love going back and watching his stuff too, no matter what era.
The mouth of the South. People don't realize he was a rock star and, you know, but no, he learned his trade, learned his craft. Jimmy, his professionalism through the years, but back in the day, he understood that at the end of the day, and that's something that also that I think a lot of times is missed. Jimmy understood this is a business. We're here to make money. If we make money, that means we have a job the next day and the next day. Other than that, it's all playtime. And Jimmy never looked at it that way. Sacrificed his blood and countless miles and just Jimmy's sacrifices to this business is goes understated a lot of times.
Yeah. In addition to being such a great bad guy, he's also probably like one of the sweetest guys I've ever met in person too. So it's always fun to see away from the ring, you know, just how the difference is. So we're going to move on to something we call the three count now. It's going to be three quick questions and your answers. So aside from My World, what is your favorite Jeff Jarrett entrance theme?
Oh my gosh. Man. I mean, it's the gong when Undertaker's theme goes off. It's one of those deals that's so simplistic that it's such a that obviously Flair's Space Odyssey that's you know I'm almost saying play the classics. Yeah. Cena's up top was good. If you want to kind of get granular here, to use a term, you know, when you go back and hear Awesome Kong's theme in TNA, the first 15 seconds just really like grabbed it. And you, to me, you built the anticipation was built by hearing the first few notes of their music. That's, to me, the mark of a good thing. I thought Abyss's theme had that. I thought AJ Styles' early theme had that. Man, Pip, you get me talking about music, I'll where you're at, where you're here, and I'll be here. We'll be here a while, but I'll cut it off there.
I always liked the Southern Justice, Jeff Jarrett, Don't Piss Me Off theme. I thought that one was an underrated.
There's a few guys that like that. I mean, it was fine with me, but it wasn't. I can't say it was one of my favorites.
So, second question. If you had to show someone three Jeff Jarrett matches that illustrated your career, what would you show them?
Oh, my gosh, Phil. You got to give me some prep time on this. Different eras, without question. Off the top of my head, I'd have to say me and Sean, 95, In Your House 2.
Great match.
Me and Kurt Angle, there's a few. There's a Charlotte match. There's a Cincinnati match. Maybe me and a Kurt match, kind of an obscure match for a young guy to watch. I wrestled Nick Bockwinkel. He was in his early 50s and I was 19. And the reason I kind of point that out is you say, there's no way those guys can have any kind of meaningful match. It, you know, there's an age different, there's a style different, there's all that. Nick, an incredible pro. Let a 19-year-old kid who was clueless through something, but that is one. I had a match against Ray Gonzalez down in Puerto Rico. That's an obscure one. The heat that was generated out of that. A couple of matches in Mexico. The heat, and it's you kind of have to understand. Look, is it going to get a rating and a star rating or whatever it may be? That was never the goal. Specifically. In the type of matches when you're generating heat, you have to have a different mindset. But my Mexico work and some Puerto Rico matches were money makers.
All right, and then the last question. So you've wrestled with or against everyone from Steve Austin to Tojo Yamamoto to China to Effie to Psycho Clown. You've done physical angles with Toby Keith, Gary Coleman, Cindy Margolis, and Chuck Norris, if I've got all of those down.
Paul Wunderhausen too, pal.
That's the most recent, yeah. Who's the most off-the-wall name you've actually had a match with? I know Bockwinkel's an interesting one. Any others that are on your list of all your years in wrestling where people be like, Jeff Jarrett wrestled that guy?
Well, the Symphony match that me and Dutch had was the only match in the Smithsonian Institute. That's a unique, bizarre match. It's the only match in the history of professional wrestling that is in the Smithsonian Institute. But so you're probably going to have to take me way, way back. Like, he really wrestled? I'm just trying to think. Phil, my early years. Oh, man, who would have come through the territories back then? Oh, the Von Erichs and Austin Idol, who you can still see this day. Just trying to think of a unique set of circumstances. I wrestled one of the most famous cricketers in the world. So if you want to, you know, it obviously gets out of the U.S. and North America kind of sphere, but Harbhajan Singh and Rinka King, I don't think people understand, and, you know, how would they? But here's a guy that was literally one of the most famous bowlers, cricketers in the world. And he was a part of a wrestling series. And I ended up having a blindfold match with him and lots of bells and whistles. But that was a really high profile match that I look back on and go, that's kind of an obscure kind of match that people, you know, if they really dialed in, he ranks right up there. He may not be the Michael Jordan of cricket, but he's certainly a mega, mega, mega star that I actually got in the ring with.
Fascinating. I never knew you wrestled Nick Bockwinkel until today. So I would have.
No way. You didn't know that one?
I did not know that one.
Okay. It's on, I believe that one's on YouTube.
I'm going to find that. That's a good one. My light just went out in the motion sensor. So that's going to wrap us up. So, Jeff, thank you so much for.
Bills in the Dark, the Undertaker theme took hold of you, pal.
thanks so much for joining me today. I really do appreciate the time and all the best with everything you've got moving forward, especially with the AW and the house shows and everything.
Phil, I got to say this, pal. It is great to see you. We're still churning out content back from the. What was the call letters of Poughkeepsie, WDRB? No,
I think we were at the WPDH studios that day, but it was Cumulus, which is now, I think, Town Square, which is, I worked for the Poughkeepsie Journal, now with the Journal News, and everything changes. But
all right.
What's that?
You're still in Poughkeepsie.
I live in Poughkeepsie. I'm actually, this dark room that I'm trying to get attention in, there we go, is actually in White Plains right now. But okay. I do still work for Poughkeepsie also.
Gotcha. All right, pal. I appreciate your time today. Thanks for having me on.
Good to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Phil.
Thanks again, everyone, for joining me today on Under the Ring Pro Wrestling Conversations. I'd like to thank Jeff Jarrett for joining me today. I'd also like to thank John Schneider from All Elite Wrestling for setting it up. And join us next week for another edition of Under the Ring Pro Wrestling Conversations.